This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Todd Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, October 15th, 2019. We start on the front page under the education heading here. Be our guest teacher. Decatur offers assistance from yoga to classroom management. This article is by Valerie Wells from Decatur. Ellen Berger wasn't the least bit tired of teaching when she retired after 36 years. The first thing she did was sign up to be a substitute teacher, which she's been doing for 7 years. It's the best of both worlds, said Berger. I don't have to do any paperwork. I just have the kids, which are my favorite part. I never thought of leaving teaching for good for a second. It keeps me involved, and if I can help the kids, I'm there. The Decatur School District has changed the terminology for substitutes to guest teacher in an effort to make those substitutes feel welcome and part of the staff, said Hilda Nichols, a member of the district's aspiring Principal Leadership Institute. It's more of an extension of the teacher instead of something isolated by itself, Nichols said. It feels more inclusive and more inviting to call them a guest teacher. With 57 unfilled openings in Decatur schools, guest teachers are a critical piece in the puzzle, Nichols said. The district is among those across the state dealing with a teacher shortage, and many of the guest teachers wind up serving in long-term roles. The Aspiring Principals Group created a series of professional development sessions to provide guest teachers with training. Though a significant number of substitutes are, like Berger, retired teachers, many are not and have no specific training in teaching. I've had a little practice, Berger said with a laugh. I never had any trouble with discipline. I always had a straightforward routine, and the kids responded to that. To be a substitute teacher in Illinois, a candidate must have a bachelor's degree and obtain a substitute teaching license unless the person already holds a professional educator license. The cost to apply for a substitute teaching license is $50 and requires a transcript from the applicant's accredited university. Once the applicant has that license, he or she must register it with the Regional Office of Education for it to be valid and for the applicant to be eligible for employment. The registration also costs $50. Applicants must also have an original statement of good health signed by a physician that is no more than a year old. Substitutes must also pay $65 for fingerprinting and a background check. Once all that is complete, the regional office will mail a substitute teacher authorization letter and copies of the background check and physical to the applicant to use in applying for substitute positions, and that information must be provided to each district office where the applicant would like to work. We just had our first professional development session, Nichols said. There was one on classroom management, one on building relationships, and one that I did on self-care, and yoga was included in mine. We sent out invitations to all of the guest teachers we had on our list at Human Resources. The plan is to offer these sessions periodically on topics that the members of the Leadership Institute think might be essential, beneficial, and they also are open to suggestions from the guest teachers themselves. Some have asked for crisis prevention training helpful for certification, which is required in case a staff member must restrain a violent student. You have to carry them a certain way, and there has to be a team involved. If you have to carry a student to prevent them from hurting themselves or someone else, Nichols said. Some teachers are certified in that, especially in the social and emotional development program or other programs in the district where there might be issues that arise. Having a guest teacher that is certified in those areas would be handy. There are plenty of times, Nichols said, when guest teachers have never been in a classroom and there is no formal training provided. As long as they meet the state's requirements, they can work as a substitute. That's why the APLI members wanted to offer training. The whole point of this, really, was to give the most support to the adults who come in and have never been in a classroom before as the teacher, she said. Sidebar here, if you go, what is the heading here, Decatur School District Teacher Hiring Event. When? 4 to 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, October 23rd. Where? Keele Administration Building, 101 East Sarah Gordo Street. And for more information, call Jay Owens, 217-362-3004, or email jlowens@dps61.org. And some really neat pictures here. Guest teacher Ellen Berger teaches preschool and kindergarten, standing in for teacher Aaron Dobrynik on October 3rd at Enterprise Elementary School in Decatur. Substitute teachers are critical in filling gaps created by a statewide shortage of teachers. So there's four students here, all around a, looks like a in a reading area with lots of books. They all have their eyes facing a student who is sitting down and reading to them, and the teacher, Ellen Berger, is standing above them. Looks like everyone's very attentive. And another photo here, again with reading, which is great. Enterprise kindergartner Hannah Jicey left, guest teacher Ellen Berger Center, and kindergartner Phoenix Benjamin read books earlier this month at Enterprise School in Decatur. Really, really nice. Looks like nice board books. I can't tell what they're reading, but they are reading, and that's the important thing. We move on to page A3 now, the local and state section. Decatur Entertainment, Memories of Rock, Milliken instructor will recount times with Johnny Rotten. This article is by Garrett Karsten from Decatur. Martin Atkins, a drummer who performed with English post-punk band Public Image Limited, will give a first-hand account of the experience at a free event Wednesday. Memories, my 5 years in and out of Public Image Limited, 1979 to 1985, is a first-hand account of Atkins' time in the band. The group was created by John Lydon in 1978 following his departure from the Sex Pistols, where he went by the stage name Johnny Rotten. Atkins, who is now an instructor and coordinator of music business at Milliken University School of Music, will give his account during a presentation from 6 to 9 p.m. Wednesday at Speakeasy Records and Oddities, 651 West El Dorado Street. General admission is free. People can register at eventbrite.com or the event's Facebook page. The presentation features stories through his music career that involve broken bones and getting 16 stitches in his head. His personal stories also account leaving the group in 1980 to focus on his band Brian Brain with Pete Jones, another former member of Public Image Limited. He rejoined Public Image Limited in 1981, describing it as the most dangerous band on the planet. He left it for the final time in 1985 and revived his Brian Brain project. Brian Abbott, owner of Speakeasy Records and Oddities, said the appearance is exciting since the store just relocated after its previous building burned down in early April this year. If you this will be the first main event hosted at the new location, he said. If you go, Memories, My 5 Years in and Out of Public Image Limited, 1979 to 1985. When? 6 to 9 p.m., Wednesday, October 16th. Where? Speakeasy Records and Oddities. Cost is free. And online at bit.ly/Martin Atkins. Wow, that'll be really great. I'm a fan of Public Image Limited, and that'll be a really neat thing to hear and see. Day Off Fun, Active Alternative, DISC event, keeps kids occupied during day off from school. This article is by Donette Beckett from Decatur. While their parents spent Columbus Day working, the Shook sisters, 9-year-old Gianna and her 8-year-old sister Frankie, spent their day off of school Monday at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. "It's fun when we have days off," Gianna said, "but I would be home watching TV all day." Columbus Day for many was not considered a work holiday. Knowing this can pose a challenge for many families, the Decatur Park District offers a day filled with fun during the school's out day camp on most holidays that children have off school. The Shook sisters admit the day playing with friends is more enjoyable than staying at home. "Well, kind of," Frankie said. Instead, the day was spent playing miniature golf, watching a movie, playing games in the DISC gyms, and eating snacks. Outings in the past have included bowling, a Halloween party, a pizza party, skating and water park visits. We keep them busy and active, said Kate Black, assistant manager at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. We aim to give parents a safe place for their kids. Some parents bring their children to camp, even if they do have the day off work. The day camp is available from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the special holidays. Future dates include October 25th and 28th, November 27th and 29th, January 20th and February 17th. The program is $40 per child or $35 for those residing in the Decatur Park District boundaries. A 15% discount is applied to each additional child. Black said the program is helpful for families with multiple children. The kids are able to stay together, but without the strife of being together all the time, she said. Children don't see the program as a daycare, she said. They see it as a great deal of fun. As a Park District camp counselor, Amber Johnson, 21, organizes the children's activities. It helps keep them busy instead of staying at home watching TV or being on their electronics, she said. It keeps them active. Another positive result of the friendships is the friendships that form during the daily program. They get to meet new kids from other schools that come here, Johnson said. Friendships are also formed with the adults in the group. With the counselors, we form a bond with them too, said Riley Vaught, 18, camp counselor. Coming to work today, I'm actually really excited. And what 18-year-old is excited to go to work? So true. If you go, school's out day camp, when? 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the following dates, October 25th, 28th, November 27th and 29th, January 20th and February 17th. Where the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, 1295 West Wood, with transportation to various field trips. And the cost is $40 or $35 with resident discount per day, 15% discount for each additional sibling. And for more information, call 217-429-3472. And there's a neat picture of 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 kids. Looks like on the activity floor here. Facing each other in pairs of two, children and camp counselors play games in the Green Gym at DISC on Monday as part of the Decatur Park District's Schools Out Day Camp program. Local man pleads not guilty in whipping Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur man, prosecutors accuse of whipping a 9-year-old girl repeatedly with a belt because she got her math homework wrong, is pleading not guilty to a charge of inflicting aggravated battery causing bodily harm. Craig L. Owens, 28, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court Wednesday with his attorney, Michelle Sanders, and also denied committing two counts of domestic battery while having prior domestic battery convictions. Judge Phoebe Bowers ruled there was enough evidence to bring the charges against Owens and scheduled a pretrial hearing for November 5th. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police about the beatings said Owens had attacked the girl on the afternoon of September 10th at her home after she showed him her homework. Writing in the affidavit, Decatur police officer Nicholas Arrett said Owens then held up his fingers to indicate the numbers 1, 0, and 8, presumably wanting the child to add them. She, the child, thought it was 180, and she said Craig then hit her with the belt again across her right thigh because she got the answer wrong, added Arrett. Owens remains held in custody at the Macon County Jail on Monday night in lieu of posting bond set at $50,000. If he does make bond, he is ordered to have no contact with the child or go to her home. Three boys accused in attempted theft. Donette Beckett, Decatur. Police say the victim of an attempted bike theft by three boys Sunday said that a gun was pointed at him during the incident. A BB gun was later found, police said. Police were called at about noon Sunday, and the 52-year-old man said one of the boys had a silver and black semi-automatic handgun, said Decatur Police Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland. The boys ended up not getting the bike and rode away on their own bikes eastbound on Grand Avenue near Clinton Street, Copeland said. The suspects are 10, 11, and 13, police said. A police dog found a silver and black BB gun in a backyard that was in the path of the boys, police said. The 13-year-old was incarcerated in the juvenile detention center in Peoria. The younger boys were petitioned to court. In Christian County news here, new clinic opens in Taylorville. This article's by Annalisa Trofimuk from Taylorville. Memorial Behavioral Health and Southern Illinois University Medicine have teamed up to provide primary care and mental health services at a clinic that opened Monday in Taylorville. By integrating medical care with mental health services, we can strengthen access to the community for the care people need for themselves and their loved ones when they need it, said Jan Gambach, System Administrator for Behavioral Health. The clinic is at 303 Bidwell Street, which formerly housed the Taylorville Memorial Hospital Finance and Billing staff. Staff from the SIU Center for Family Medicine, Taylorville, will provide primary care for all ages as well as women's health and behavioral services, according to a press release. SIU originally opened its clinic in January inside Taylorville Memorial Hospital. Memorial Behavioral Health Taylorville will provide crisis intervention, mental health assessments, community-based recovery services, therapy, and integrated behavioral health. We are excited to continue to serve the residents of Taylorville and the surrounding communities in our new location, said Dr. Janet Albera, chair of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at SIU Medicine. Shelbyville discusses public pool policy. Child nearly drowned in incident earlier this summer. This article is by John Curtis from the Shelbyville Daily Union, Shelbyville. Community leaders are looking into the policy on flotation devices at the Shelbyville Family Aquatic Center after a child nearly drowned over the summer. Brandon and Sarah Walker visited the pool on July 17th, bringing a flotation device called a puddle jumper for their two-year-old daughter, Kennedy. Brandon Walker told the Shelbyville City Council last week they were told flotation devices were not allowed in the pool. They entered and played with their daughter without a flotation device in the gradual slope of the shallow end where the toddlers play. Also that day, Dan and Rebecca Mulner of Mokina and their kids were visiting Lake Shelbyville. Dan Mulner said they had boat trouble and had to find something else to do that day, so they went to the pool and were enjoying a perfect day. Simultaneously, my husband Dan and I focused in on the shallow end of the pool, opposite to where we were enjoying the moment. We recognized a mother scoop up her lifeless child from the pool, Rebecca Mulner remembers. Dan Mulner is a full-time firefighter and Rebecca Mulner is a nurse. We watched as the woman tried to hand her limp child from the pool to the lifeguard, Rebecca Mulner said. We intervened, knowing that seconds count, instructing the lifeguards to call 911, and started to assess the situation and to provide immediate life-saving measures to this cyanotic, pulseless, and not breathing child. My wife and I performed CPR on the child that was found to be pulseless and not breathing, Dan Mulner said. The actions taken for the child had an amazing result. She is doing great and has no deficits. Drowning is the leading cause of death in children 1 to 4, Rebecca Mulner said. Drowning is silent. Children can drown right in front of parents as little as a few feet away. Rescuers have seconds to save a person from drowning. It takes only 20 seconds for a child to drown, according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This could have been prevented, Rebecca Mulner said. As many of you know, Shelbyville Family Aquatic Center does not allow personal flotation devices. I'm not talking about noodles, rafts, or water wings. I'm talking about U.S. Coast Guard-approved personal flotation devices. Community pools and water parks all over our state and across the nation have considered this and made changes that prioritize safety and allow PFDs. Chicagoland area community pools in their suburbs alike, as well as Springfield, Champaign, and Decatur, are just a few pools that they too have prioritized safety. Rebecca Mulner suggested a change in the policy for the Shelbyville Family Aquatic Center. The Shelbyville Family Aquatic Center is closed until next spring. The Mulners and the Walkers still hope to see a change in the policy with an effort they call Kennedy Cares. The City Council has pledged to come up with an answer before the next swimming season. No serious injuries in U.S. 36 crash. Tony Reed, Decatur. Police on Monday said a driver suffered non-life-threatening injuries Friday evening when her vehicle was involved in a collision in the intersection of the U.S. 36 and Airport Road in Decatur. Lieutenant Shannon Seal said the accident partially shut down the intersection for about an hour, and police were called to the scene at 4:49 p.m. Seal said a sport utility vehicle eastbound on U.S. 36 had been attempting to turn north against a red light onto Airport Road when it was in a T-bone collision with another SUV traveling westbound. The 49-year-old driver of the westbound vehicle told police she had been hurt and was taken to a hospital for evaluation. A male passenger, 49, and children aged 6 and 3 in her vehicle were not injured, according to Seal. The 39-year-old female driver of the other SUV involved also escaped injury. Speaking Monday evening, Seal said she did not have precise details of pending charges, but said this driver was ticketed for actions police believe led to the crash. All right. Well, it looks like kind of light content in the paper today, not as much. So we're going to go back to the front page here. And this is in the news quite a bit. E-cigarettes. Health scare scramble could cause backlash. Clampdown on vaping could send users back towards cigarettes. This article is by Matthew Perrone from the Associated Press, Washington. Only 2 years ago, electronic cigarettes were viewed as a small industry with big potential to improve public health by offering a path to steer millions of smokers away from deadly cigarettes. That promise led U.S. regulators to take a hands-off approach to e-cigarette makers, including a Silicon Valley startup named Juul Labs, which was being praised for creating the iPhone of e-cigarettes. Today, Juul and hundreds of smaller companies are at the center of a political backlash that threatens to sweep e-cigarettes from store shelves nationwide as politicians scramble to address two separate public health crises tied to vaping: underage use among teenagers and a mysterious and sometimes fatal lung ailment that has affected more than 1,000 people. New restrictions at the local, state, and federal level are poised to wipe out thousands of fruit, candy, and dessert-flavored vapes that have attracted teens. But experts who study tobacco policy fear the scattershot approach of the clampdown could have damaging unintended consequences, including driving adults who vape back to cigarette smoking, which remains the nation's leading preventable cause of death. This could take us from potentially the single biggest improvement in public health in the United States toward a public health disaster in which cigarettes continue to be the dominant nicotine product, said Jonathan Folds, an addiction researcher and tobacco specialist at Penn State University. Folds and many other experts continue to view e-cigarettes as a potential off-ramp for smokers, allowing them to continue using nicotine, the addictive chemical in cigarettes, without inhaling all the toxic byproducts of burning tobacco. But they warn the vaping backlash could do irreparable harm to the public perception of e-cigarettes while ignoring the riskiest products that are most likely to blame for the recent outbreak. Federal investigators say that nearly 80% of people who have come down with the vaping illness reported using products containing THC, the high-inducing chemical found in marijuana. They have not traced the problem to any single product or ingredient, but investigators are increasingly focused on thickeners and additives found in illegal THC cartridges sold on the black market. Earlier this month, the Food and Drug Administration specifically warned the public not to vape THC or purchase any vaping products off the street. THC vapes are separate from the legal nicotine-filled e-cigarettes being targeted by President Donald Trump and politicians across the country. Democratic governors in New York, Michigan, Washington, Rhode Island, and Oregon have followed the president's plan to ban flavored e-cigarettes nationally with their own state-level flavor restrictions. Massachusetts Republican governor has gone even further, placing a four-month moratorium on sales of vaping products of any kind. The problem here is we have convinced adult America that vaping is as dangerous as smoking, and nothing could be further from the truth, said Kenneth Warner, professor emeritus at the University of Michigan's School of Public Health. And there's a photo here of a pink cloud of smoke, very thick, coming from a person blowing it out, a person's backlit, and so they're shaded. Only 2 years ago, e-cigarettes were viewed as holding great potential for public health, offering a way to wean smokers off traditional cigarettes. But now, Juul and other vaping companies face an escalating backlash that threatens to sweep their products off the market. And we go on to Syria. President orders sanctions. U.S. asks Turkey to stop invasion. Pence bound for region. Robert Burns, the Associated Press from Washington. Targeting Turkey's economy, President Donald Trump announced sanctions Monday aimed at restraining the Turks' assault against Kurdish fighters and civilians in Syria, an assault Turkey began after Trump announced he was moving U.S. troops out of the way. The United States also called on Turkey to stop the invasion, and Trump is sending Vice President Mike Pence to the region in an attempt to begin negotiations. Pence and Trump spoke directly to Turkish leader Recep Tayyip Erdogan. President Trump communicated to him very clearly that the United States of America wants Turkey to stop the invasion, implement an immediate ceasefire, and to begin to negotiate with Kurdish forces in Syria to bring an end to the violence, Pence said. The Americans were scrambling for Syria's exits, a move criticized at home and abroad as opening the door to a resurgence of the Islamic State group whose violent terror takeover of Syrian and Iraqi lands 5 years ago was the reason American forces came in the first place. Trump said the approximately 1,000 U.S. troops who were partnering with local Kurdish fighters to battle IS in northern Syria are leaving the country. They will remain in the Middle East, he said, to monitor the situation and to prevent a revival of IS, a goal that even Trump's allies say became much harder as a result of the U.S. pullout. The Turks began attacks in Syria last week against the Syrian Kurdish fighters, whom the Turks see as terrorists. On Monday, Syrian government troops moved north toward the border region, setting up a potential clash with Turkish-led forces. Trump said Turkey's invasion is precipitating a humanitarian crisis and setting conditions for a possible war crimes, a reference to reports of Turkish-backed fighters executing Kurdish fighters on the battlefield. The Kurdish forces previously allied with the U.S. said they reached a deal with President Bashar Assad's government to help them fend off Turkey's invasion, a move that brings Russian forces deeper into the conflict. In his sanctions announcement, Trump said he halted Turkey trade negotiations with Turkey and raised steel tariffs. He said he would soon sign an order permitting sanctions to be imposed on current and former Turkish officials. I am fully prepared to swiftly destroy Turkey's economy if Turkish leaders continue down this dangerous and destructive path, Trump said. American troops consolidated their positions in northern Syria on Monday and prepared to evacuate equipment in advance of a full withdrawal, a U.S. defense official said. The official, who was not authorized to be quoted by name, said U.S. officials were weighing options for a potential future counter-IS campaign, including the possibility of waging it with a combination of air power and special operations forces based outside of Syria, perhaps in Iraq. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, October 15th, 2019. Please stay tuned.